The United States government is borrowing $155 billion every month. That is $39 billion a week, $5.5 billion per day, and the interest it pays on the debt it has already accumulated, $39.4 trillion, has reached $857 billion for the first 9 months of this fiscal year. That is $24 billion a week in interest alone. Just to put that in perspective, the interest payments on America's national debt are now larger than the combined budgets of the Department of Defense, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Education, and the Environmental Protection Agency, the Small Business Administration, and the U.S. Coronavirus Refund Program combined, accumulated, sum of all of these. The government spends more servicing its debt than it spends defending its borders, educating its children, protecting its environment, and supporting its small businesses put together. And this week, three separate institutions published data confirming that the system sustaining this borrowing is breaking down from every direction simultaneously. It takes a truly special kind of financial genius to spend more on credit card interest than on your own military, your schools, and on your borders combined, all while bragging about it. It's essentially running the world's largest economy like a broke influencer trying to keep up appearances. My name is Elle, and I use data analysis to spot patterns in geopolitics and economics, and the pattern across these three reports is that every policy decision this administration has made has produced the opposite of its intended outcome, and the compounding cost of those failures is now arriving in the form of numbers so large that they have stopped being abstract and started being structural. And just as a legal reminder, this is not financial advice. If you want financial advice, you could ask the US Treasury. They seem to be treating a $40 trillion debt limit like a high score on an arcade machine anyway. The International Monetary Fund published its July World Economic Outlook on Wednesday. Global growth has been cut to 3%, down from 3.5% last year and from the 3.1% the IMF forecast in April. The leading cause, stated explicitly in the report, is the United States' war with Iran. Oil prices are up 32% for the year. Global consumer inflation has risen to 4.7%, up from 4.1% in 2025, meaning two full years of progress against inflation have been erased in 5 months. The IMF's forecast assumes the Strait of Hormuz reopens later this month, but it's been assuming that for a while. On the same day the report was published, however, Trump declared the ceasefire with Iran over, launched new strikes, and revoked the waiver that allowed Iran to sell oil on global markets. The IMF's baseline assumption was invalidated yet again by the president's own words on the same day it was published. If the strait does not reopen, and as of today there is no indication that it will, the IMF's adverse scenario projects global growth falling to 2.5% with inflation exceeding 5%. The severe scenario, however, is 2% growth and 6% inflation, which is way worse. The war was started to project American strength, but it has projected American chaos, and the IMF has now quantified the cost to every economy on Earth. Washington essentially lit a fire in the world's most critical energy corridor, completely torched 2 years of global inflation progress, and then looked around wondering why no one was applauding their leadership. The data proves what we already knew: American foreign policy doesn't necessarily project strength anymore, it just projects a very expensive mess. If you've been following this channel's coverage of the US economy, this is the institutional confirmation chapter, the moment where the world's most authoritative economic body says what this channel has been documenting since February. The K-shaped spending data published by Yahoo Finance this week adds the human dimension that the IMF's macro numbers obscure. The top 10% of American earners now spend nearly as much on non-essential goods and services as the bottom 70% combined. That sentence is definitely worth rewinding for. The wealthiest tenth of the country spends almost as much on luxuries, travel, dining, and discretionary consumption as the bottom seven-tenths, 170 million adults, spend on everything that is not a mortgage, a utility bill, or groceries. It's not even an economy in recession anymore. It is an economy that has fractured along a wealth line so severe that the top and the bottom are living in different countries sharing the same currency. Consumer confidence is at a 70-year low. 37% of Americans cannot cover a $400 emergency. One in four is skipping meals to make debt payments. Credit card debt is at a record $1.21 trillion at an average interest rate of 22.76%. And the top 10% are spending as if none of that is happening, because for them, it isn't. If you want to understand how to read through delusional headline data and why American cable news tries to frame this financial fracturing as a booming success because the top 10% bought more yachts this quarter, my book, Awake: The Practice of Critical Thinking in an Age of Self-Lies, is available as an ebook and audiobook. Subscribers get 10% off, and you can grab the first chapter for free in the description links below. And into this environment, record borrowing, record interest, a war that just restarted, inflation erasing 2 years of progress, and a consumer economy that only works for the top 10%, the administration passed the big, beautiful bill through the House. I'm sure you all remember that. The bill guts clean energy tax credits that were driving the fastest renewable energy deployment in American history. It revives subsidies for coal, a fuel source that employs fewer Americans than Arby's. And it does this in the same week that the IMF specifically credited artificial intelligence and renewable energy as the two forces preventing the global economy from falling even further. The fund's deputy director, Petya Kueva-Brooks, told Bloomberg that without the AI and clean energy boom, the growth outlook would be substantially worse. The administration's response to that finding was to defund one of the two things keeping the global economy afloat. Europe, by contrast, is doing the opposite. European households save over 2,000 euros per year by switching to heat pumps and electric vehicles, a number that increases every time oil prices rise because of a war Europe did not start and does not support. Wind energy investment returns 7 euros for every 1 euro of public funding. The EU's Made in Europe Act redirects 2 trillion euros in procurement towards European manufacturers. And the clean energy transition that the United States is now actively dismantling is the same transition that is reducing Europe's exposure to the oil price volatility that the IMF just identified as the single largest threat to the global economy. While Congress was busy passing a bill that literally subsidizes coal, which is a fuel source that, yes, mathematically employs fewer people than Arby's, Europe was quietly building a high-tech, self-sustaining green powerhouse. It is a beautiful contrast. Europe is investing in the future, Canada as well, while the US is legally defending the energy strategy of the 19th century. The structural buyer base for American debt is contracting from every single direction. China's treasury holdings are at an 18-year low. Japan is dumping at the fastest pace since 2022 and intervening in currency markets at 2 in the morning because the yen is collapsing. Europe, the largest foreign creditor, is not selling dramatically, but is doing something more consequential, gradually and quietly structurally reducing its marginal purchases, redirecting capital into euro-denominated assets and gold. Gold now represents 27% of global central bank reserves. US treasuries have fallen to 22%. The crossover happened without a big headline, but we did cover in this channel. And every time the US freezes an adversary's assets, seizes cryptocurrency, or threatens an ally's trade, another central bank concludes that the safest reserve asset is the one Washington cannot confiscate. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget said this week, and I'm quoting here, "We will likely borrow $2 trillion or more this fiscal year, an astounding figure given that the economy keeps growing and unemployment is low." That is the detail that makes the borrowing numbers genuinely alarming. The US is not borrowing $2 trillion because of a recession. It is not borrowing because of a pandemic or another black swan event. It's not borrowing because of a financial crisis. It's borrowing $2 trillion during what the administration itself describes as the greatest economy the world has ever known. If the deficit is $2 trillion when unemployment is low and GDP is growing, what does the deficit look like when the recession the IMF is warning about actually arrives? They're maxing out the national credit card during what they call the greatest economy the world has ever known. That is like taking out a massive second mortgage during the peak of your career just to buy scratch-offs. The crash is not just predictable at this point, it's practically scheduled. I don't exactly know when it's going to happen, and again, not financial advice, but all of the data seems to be pointing in this direction. In terms of what's going to happen next, the prediction is that the fiscal year ending in September will produce a deficit exceeding $2 trillion, which is the largest non-pandemic deficit in American history. The interest bill will likely surpass $1.2 trillion on an annualized basis by the fourth quarter as elevated yields and expanding debt compound simultaneously. The IMF's July growth forecast will be revised downward again in October if the Iran ceasefire does not hold and oil remains above $100. The K-shaped consumer economy will widen further as rate hikes compress purchasing power for the bottom 70%, while asset price inflation continues to benefit the top 10. And the structural buyer base for US treasuries, Japan selling out of desperation, China selling out of strategy, Europe buying less out of prudence, central banks choosing gold over dollars, will likely continue to erode with every auction, every intervention, and every presidential declaration that the ceasefire is over. But while the US borrows $2 trillion a year to sustain an economy that only works for the top 10%, Japan is selling dollars at 2 in the morning and Europe is building the euro into a safe haven currency. I made a separate analysis on how those two forces are reshaping the global financial system in real time. That's the video that I would watch next, because watching the eurozone and global central banks quietly move their money out of Washington's reach is the actual ultimate reality check. Turns out, arithmetic doesn't care about social media hype or caps lock letters. Go watch that next, and I'll see you there.